Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. So we're continuing our reading from the Srimad Bhagavatam. First canto, chapter 13, entitled Dhritarashtra Quits Home. And today's text should be 50, I think. Yes, 50. Okay. Nishparitam Deva Krityam Avasesham Pratikshate Tavad Yuyam Avekshadvam Bhaved Yavad Iheshvaraha Nishparitam Deva Krityam Avasesham Pratikshate Tavad Yuyam Avekshadvam Bhaved Yavad Iheshvaraha Nishparitang Deva Krityam Avasheshang Pratikshate Tavad Yuyam Avekshadvam Bhaved Yavad Iheshvaraha Nishparitang Deva Krityam Avasheshang Pratikshate Tavad Yuyam Avekshadvam Bhaved Yavad Iheshvaraha. Please chant. Nishparitang Deva Krityam Avasheshang Pratikshate Tavad Yuyam Avekshadvam Paved Yuyamanimeshvaraha. Okay, synonyms. Nishparitam performed. Deva Krityam. What was to be done on behalf of the demigods? Avashesham, the rest. Pratikshate, being awaited. Tavat, up to that time. Yuyam, all of you Pandavas, Abhikshadvam. Observe and wait. Bhavet. May. Yavat. As long as. Iha. In this world. Ishvaraha. The Supreme Lord. Srila Prabhupada's translation for this verse. The Lord has already performed His duties to help the demigods, and He is awaiting the rest. You Pandavas may wait as long as the Lord is here on earth. Please repeat. The Lord has already performed His duties to help the demigods, and He is awaiting the rest. You Pandavas may wait as long as the Lord is here on earth. Srila Prabhupada's purport. The Lord ascends from His abode, Krishna Loka, the topmost planet in the spiritual sky, in order to help the demigod administrators of this material world when they are greatly vexed by the asuras, who are envious not only of the Lord but also of His devotees. As referred to above, the conditioned living beings contact material association by their own choice, dictated by a strong desire to lord it over the resources of the material world and become imitation lords of all they survey. Everyone is trying to become an imitation god. There is keen competition among such imitation gods, and such competitors are generally known as asuras. When there are too many asuras in the world, then it becomes a hell for those who are devotees of the Lord. Due to the growth of the asuras, the mass of people who are generally devoted to the Lord by nature and the pure devotees of the Lord, including the demigods and higher planets, pray to the Lord for relief. And the Lord either descends personally from His abode or deputes some of His devotees to remodel the fallen condition of human society or even animal society. Such disruptions take place not only in human society but also among animals, birds, or other living beings, including the demigods and the higher planets. Lord Sri Krishna descended personally to vanquish asuras like Kamsa, Jarasandha, and Shishupala. And during the reign of Maharaj Yudhishthira, almost all these asuras were killed by the Lord. Now He was awaiting the annihilation of His own dynasty called the Yaduvamsa, who appeared by His will in this world. He wanted to take them away before His own departure to His eternal abode. Narada, like Vidura, did not disclose the imminent annihilation of the Yadu dynasty, but indirectly gave a hint to the king and his brothers to wait till the incident happened and the Lord departed. Namo Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prishtaya Bhutale Shrimati Bhaktivedanta Swamini Tinamine Namaste Saraswate Deve Gauravani Pracharine Nirvishesha Shunyavani Paschachadeshtarine Om Agyana Tamarandasya Gyananjana Shalakaya Chakshur Unmilitam Jaina Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manobhisham Shapitang Jaina Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamayam Dadati Swapadantikam Vandeyaham Shri Guru Shri Yutapada Kamalam Shri Guru Vaishamangsha Shri Rupam Sagadatam Sahagana Raganatan Bhutam Tang Sajivam Sadvaitam Savadutam Purijana Saitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padan Sahagana Lalita Shri Vishakan Bhutangsa He Krishna Karuna Sindhu Dina Bando Jagatpate Opesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namosate Tapta Kanchana Gaurangi Radhe Vrindavaneshri Vishavanu Sute Devi Pranamami Haripe Ancho Kopatrubhyasya Kripa Sindhube Evacha Patitanang Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Dityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shivasari Gaur Bhaktivinoda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. So, in this world, sometimes we become such outlaws that we don't even care for the readily visible local authorities, what to speak of higher authorities like the demigods and the highest authority, Sri Krishna Himself. So it's not surprising that people don't accept demigods and God. They don't even accept the local authority. They think they can take anything they want. They don't care that there's a Department of Water and Power. They just take as much water as they want and they tap into somebody else's meter or something like that. We have such outlaw mentalities in this material world that we don't even care for local authorities. So again, we can't be surprised when people don't believe in demigods or God, because they don't even believe in the police or the president. They don't care for anybody. This is the Asuric mentality. I am number one, numero uno. Whatever I want, I should be able to get or take. And who's going to stop me? I'm backed up by Smith and Wesson, you see. That's how they feel. They feel as long as they have their big guns, their weapons, they can do anything they want. And that mentality leads to the kind of thing that we just had in New Zealand, where somebody with big guns decided he wanted to take out a whole community of people. Now, the authorities in New Zealand immediately reacted by banning most, if not all, of these assault weapons. Not like here in America, there's an ongoing debate about whether people should be able to buy assault weapons. What do you need an assault rifle for? But people here feel that they have the right to bear arms and any kind of arms they want. Even if they want to buy a tank, they should be able to buy it. But in New Zealand, the authorities immediately reacted. They banned most of these assault guns. But that's not going to solve the problem, because the problem is in here. You see? You have to, as the prophet says in his purport, remodel human society. You can't just ban this and ban that and make this law and that law. That does not solve the problem. Because then the outlaws just become angrier and they organize and become bigger. And in some countries, they become bigger than the government. The government leaders and soldiers, they have to bow down to these outlaws because they have taken over a particular region or sometimes a whole country. Actually, as is stated in the Bhagavatam in the 12th canto, as Kali Yuga progresses, the government itself becomes outlaws. That should be. They simply steal by raising taxes, and when that doesn't work, they will later on come to your door, you open doors to give us, your wife even, whatever they want, they take. So this is how things degenerate in the material world. So the Lord comes. Now, it's not so obvious. The purport began by saying, or Narada Muni saying that, the Lord's business with the demigods. It's finished. They're wondering, demigods, what do they have to... They know. The demigods are completely intertwined with this Mahabharata presentation. The descent of the Lord begins with, if you read the first chapter of the Krishna book, first chapter of the 10th canto, once the world was overburdened by the unnecessary defense force of various kings. These kings were actually demons posing as the royal order. And at that time, the predominating deity of the earth, Mother Bhumi, became aggrieved. And assuming the form of a cow, she went to see Lord Brahma to explain her situation. And with tears in her eyes, she tried to invoke his mercy. Lord Brahma became perturbed by the story, and he, along with all the demigods, including Lord Shiva, and followed by Bhumi, they went to the shore of the ocean of milk, where the Lord resides. And it stated the Lord formally assumed the form of a boar, a transcendental boar, to save the earth. Then in the next paragraph, that's the first paragraph. Then in the next paragraph, it says that the demigods, they pacify the Lord by reciting a standard prayer called Purusha Shukta. And even the newest devotees, if you've been to a couple of fire yagas, you should start to understand that prayer, because our head pujari always recites at least a portion of it. Sahasra Shirsha Purushaha Sahasrakshak Sahasrapan Savomim Vishrato Dritta Atyatishtangatashangulam Purusha Evirang Sarvam Yad Bhutam Yad Chabhavyam, like that. So the Purusha Shukta is a standard prayer you can learn. It's prophet cites a portion of it in one of his purports. But it's available. You can see the entire prayer. So with the Purusha Shukta and other prayers, the demigods pacify the Lord. And Lord Rama requested that the Lord come and do something about the situation. Because ultimately, again, Krishna is the ultimate ruler. The place where the buck stops. It doesn't go any further than that. So he feels responsible. He has created this material realm, so the outlaw souls like us can come here and pretend to be God, like I stated in the purport today. Everybody wants to be the Lord of everything they survey, and everybody wants to be number one and take charge and tell everybody. Or if you can't take charge directly, then you want to tell the leader what to do. But if the leader does whatever you tell him to do, then he's not actually the leader. You're the leader. You see? So in a subtle way, people try to take over like that. Subhasprabhu, you should do like this. Subhasprabhu, you should do like that. Subhasprabhu, you should do like that. They're always telling him what he should do. So if he does everything that they say he should do, then they're ruining the community, not him. You see? And like that. Or the president, or Lord Brahma. Everybody's always telling the leader what to do. But in order to tell the leader what to do, you have to be qualified. You have to know what should be done and what should not be done. But this is the beginning of the demoniac mentality. Krishna points out in the 16th chapter. Pravritimcha nivritimcha jana nabidur asura. The beginning of the demoniac mentality is that they don't know what to be done and what should not be done. They think they can do whatever they want. Nobody should stop me. I feel like doing this or smoking that or whatever I want to do, I should be able to do. And then when the backlash comes, they become angry. Like smoking cigarettes, tobacco. It's obviously bad for you. But when there's a backlash and the government starts putting warnings, and like the state of California is very, very stringent, you can't smoke in any public place, parks and something, they become upset. I should be free to smoke wherever I want. No, secondhand smoke affects people. I don't care. You know, like that. That's the demonic mentality. Even when things, something is obviously bad for themselves, they still want to do it. That's the demonic. So, pravritimcha, nivritimcha, jana, navidur, asura. Asuras don't know what is to be done or what's not to be done. Na shocham, na pichacharo, na satyam teshu bhijate. They're unclean. And again, they don't care. They don't care. Although it's stated that there are three gateways to ill health, to illness. And one of them is to be unclean. Unclean. When one is unclean, you're inviting infections, you're inviting illness. So cleanliness is obviously good for us as individuals, but again, those with demonic mentality, they don't care. And they are shocked when you tell them, if you dare to tell them, I do. I'm sorry, I do. When I'm in Govindas, if somebody licks their finger and then touches the serving spoon, I say, don't do that! It's unclean. You're running the risk of spreading disease. And the government knows that. And that's why they force eating establishments to maintain a certain standard of cleanliness. Because uncleanliness spreads disease. But again, those with demonic mentality, instead of accepting guidance, even in the matter of bodily health, they want to do whatever they want to do. A demonic person wants a shocham, a satyam. They are not truthful. They will tell the biggest lies. Even when they're completely busted, they'll tell you it's fake news. When they're completely busted, I saw you doing it. No, it's fake news. You're lying. Like that. So this material world becomes a hellish place when such persons pose as the royal order, as leaders. And this happens all over the world, all over the universe. And therefore the demigods pray to the Lord to come, and he comes and kills most of these demons, at least the bigger ones. And then he winds up his pastime and goes back to his kingdom. But actually, as Prabhupada said, the pastimes of the Lord in the material world are like a roadshow. Prabhupada gave the example of time. When you look at your clock, if it's 8 o'clock here, when it becomes 8:01 here, it's actually 8 o'clock somewhere else, and like that. So all around the world, at some point, at some place on the globe, it's 8 o'clock, even when 8 o'clock is gone here. So similarly, when Krishna appears here, and then he seems to disappear, he's appearing somewhere else in the material world in a continuous fashion. And that's why he tells Arjuna in the 4th chapter, Bhagavad Gita, that many, many births you and I have passed. I remember all of them and you don't. So, sometimes it can be confusing. And I'm mentioning this particularly for the new devotees, that some people think that if somebody's a pure devotee, like Narad Muni or Srila Prabhupada, then they know everything. Past, present, and future. But that's not a fact. Prabhupada directly dealt with that. It's called the omniscience fallacy. A jiva soul can never know everything. So even though it seems that Narada Muni knows so much, he's telling the Pandavas about what's going to happen in the future, etc., he doesn't know everything. You see? Even a pure soul coming directly from the spiritual world does not know everything. They know what Krishna reveals to them. But because they're in touch with the Lord, as pure servants of the Lord, then he tells them directly, and then there's no doubt about what they tell you. So if Narada Muni comes and tells you, Srimadava Mahotsav, 2 weeks from now there's going to be calamity in the promenade in Santa Monica, don't plan to go there. You should plan to have your Harinam downtown LA. So you take it as fact. It's Narada Muni. So they know, whatever they tell you, you should take as a fact. So whatever Prabhupada tells you, you take as a fact, because he's a pure devotee of the Lord. But it doesn't mean that he knows everything. On a morning walk, that point was brought up to Prabhupada by Jayadvaitin. I think he was still Das Brahmacharya at the time. Maybe he already took sannyas. I don't think so. He was still Brahmacharya. And he told Prabhupada that some devotees think that pure devotees know everything. Past, present, and Prabhupada said, no, it's not like that. It's not like that. The pure devotee knows the path of devotional service and knows what Krishna reveals to them. Not that they know everything. Everything that you ate 5 years ago. They don't know that. That's not what a pure devotee is. So this is called omniscience fallacy. And based on that omniscience fallacy, some personalities think, well, why didn't Prabhupada know that such and such person was going to turn into, you know, a bad person? Why did he make him a temple president or whatever? Give him some authority or make him a sannyasi. Did he know he was going to fall down? You see, Prabhupada is not omniscient in terms of every little detail of the material world. But what he does know, for sure, is what he's telling you in his books. Who is God? How to attain him? So that we should accept. That we should accept. We should not expect, again, the pure devotee to know how many samosas I ate at the feast 5 years ago. That's not their position. Their position is that they know God thoroughly, they're completely surrendered to God. And at every moment, because they're completely in touch with God, Krishna, they're doing exactly what Krishna wants them to do. Exactly what Krishna wants them to do. They say exactly what Krishna wants them to say. So once we've accepted someone as a pure devotee like Srila Prabhupada, then we cannot criticize them. This is the point. I've made this point many times, but it's worth revisiting for our new devotees. Once you accept somebody as a pure devotee, you cannot criticize them. Cannot criticize them. Because they're doing exactly what Krishna wants them to do. The example is Arjuna, one of the Pandavas. Well, all the Pandavas, actually. Arjuna was told to kill Karna when he got down off his chariot and he was fixing the wheel. Now, in the code of fighting, you can't do that. Chachas were so chivalrous that if another chacha challenged them to a fight but didn't have weapons, he would give him weapons. Here's a sword. Here are arrows. Let's fight on an equal basis. Not that, you don't have your weapons, so I take out my M40, whatever, and I shoot you. No. Not like that. Very chivalrous. Same. And they would refuse to fight somebody who was not on the same level. If an Ekarata chacha approached a Maharata like Bhimasena or Bhishma Deva, they wouldn't fight. Come on, go. Come back when you're stronger and you've learned how to fight. Like that. So to kill an unarmed Kshatriya off his chariot is completely illegal. But because Krishna said do it, Arjuna did it, and you can't criticize Arjuna. He's doing exactly what Krishna told him to do. So this is the mentality that we have to assume when we approach someone. If we accept them if you don't accept them, whatever, you know. But if you say, I accept Srila Prabhupada is a pure devotee of Krishna, then you cannot criticize him. Just like you can't criticize Arjuna for killing Karna. Or you can't criticize Yudhishthira for telling a lie. Even though it was Dharmaraj himself, never told a lie in his life. When Krishna told him, tell Dronacharya that his son Ashwatthama is dead, he hesitated. But then he did it. Ashwatthama, the elephant, is dead. So you can't criticize him. Krishna told him to do it. Or Bhimasena, when he was fighting with Duryodhana. Again, the Chakshura code. Even now, today, in boxing, you cannot hit somebody below the waist, below the belt. It's illegal. And if you do it, the referee will, hey, stop. So in those days, it was the same thing. You can't hit a fighter below the belt. But because Duryodhana had been blessed by his mother, Gandhari, after she had maintained blindness voluntarily for so many, many, many years, she developed this tejas, this power, that anybody she looked at, their body would become like invincible. So she told him, come. This is while the battle was going on, and she was fearful that they were going to lose. So she said, you come to my room tomorrow morning, naked. So, following his mother's orders, Duryodhana was walking through the palace naked, going to his mother's room. And Krishna saw him and said, hey, what are you doing? You can't walk around here naked. At least put on a gumsha. So he got bewildered. He put on the gumsha, came before his mother Gandhari. She took off the blindfold, zapped him. And then, I told you to come naked. Oh, but Krishna told you. Then she realized, you can't beat Krishna. So he was vulnerable, just in that area where the gumption was covering. And during the club fight with Bhimasena, they were going back and forth, hitting each other. Bhimasena was the strongest, the strength of 10,000 elephants, stated in the scripture. So you have to accept it. You can't argue. How can a man be as strong as 10,000 elephants? That's what it says. So he was that strong. But Duryodhana was more skillful. He was able to dodge. And so it was an even fight. They were going back and forth and smashing so many clubs and getting a new club. And the fight was going on days and days. And so Bhimasena was thinking, why can't I kill this guy? So Krishna told him, hit him below the waist. And again, being a pure devotee, he does what Krishna tells him. So he hit him below the waist and killed him, broke his thighs, and he lay there in agony. But interestingly, even though he was such a demon, this Duryodhana tried so many ways to kill the Pandavas, did so many horrible things, when Ashwatthama illegally killed the 5 sleeping sons of the Pandavas, snuck into their tent at night and cut their heads off, then when Duryodhana was informed, he was disgusted. Even a big demon like Duryodhana was disgusted by what Ashwatthama did. So, again, we should understand that a pure devotee is a person who does exactly what God, what Krishna wants him to do at every moment. Can we get back to that platform? Because that's actually our natural platform. Just like the natural platform of existence for a child, 2-year-old, 3-year-old, 5-year-old, to do exactly what their parents tell them. Don't touch that. Come over here, sit down, do this. And then they're happy if they follow what the parents say, assuming the parents are good parents. If the child does whatever the parent says, then the child becomes happy and healthy and normal. But we see some children are born practically from day one. No, 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 leave me alone. Get out of here. They try to run away. They want to assert their independence, even though they're completely vulnerable. Well, guess what? We remain completely vulnerable our entire lives, our entire existence in the material world. We are vulnerable. Not that we can be killed. We know, Najayate Namriyate Ivan, that soul cannot be killed. But because we don't understand we are the soul, we think we're these material bodies. And these material bodies are always vulnerable in every situation. In every situation. There are so many ways in which the material body can be killed. It's just amazing. From very obvious ones to ones that are not so obvious. Again, like personal cleanliness. You contact some disease from somebody else, you don't even know it, that you have it. And then you develop something horrible, and before you know it, the person is gone. Just like that. Or you're born with some congenital disease, like many people, like my mother, had a massive aneurysm. This was the beginning of her decline. About 7 years before she actually passed away. She was living alone in a big house in Atlanta, and she felt strange. She called a neighbor. The neighbor rushed her to the hospital, and that's what happened. An aneurysm is when a big bubble develops on vein, generally in the head. Big bubble, and then if it breaks, you start bleeding in your brain. You don't even know it, and then before you know it, you die. So because she got there early, they realized what happened, and she had surgery and everything. So they say, at least the scientists, the doctors say, that the way that develops is that from birth, you have a congenital weakness in one artery, just a minute fraction of something that's not right. And over the lifetime of that artery of your heart pumping blood, boom, 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 through the veins, that weakness becomes more and more prominent, and then finally it becomes a balloon, and then boom, it bursts. So there's so many ways that the material body can go. No matter how big and strong you are, you can be taken out by something you can't even see, something you're not even aware of going on inside your body. So we should understand that. So when devotees remain meek and humble, it's not because they're losers. No, it's because they're smart. They know, I'm completely vulnerable. Let me take shelter of Krishna. Let me take shelter of Lord Nrisingadev. Jai Nrisingadev Bhagavan Ki Jai. That's why whenever I go out with the Harinam party before we start chanting, Namaste Narasinghaya, we have to take shelter of Lord Nrisingadev because this world is full of demons. This world is full. As you know, I travel a lot, and once I arrived in Bosnia, just after the incident where the Harinam party had been attacked in Sarajevo. Innocent devotees, Matajis, Prabhujis, on the street chanting Hare Krishna. And out of nowhere, this gang of hoodlums just descended on them and started beating them with bat sticks and iron rods and beating even the women. So you never know. It can happen anywhere, not just in Bosnia. Sometimes here in America, we get attacked. Even this temple got attacked. And that's why Prabhupada instituted the chanting of Nrisimha prayers every day. He, right here in this temple, he taught the devotees the Nrisimha prayers because this temple had been attacked. So we should understand that we're very vulnerable. Don't be puffed up. Don't be afraid to take shelter. It's intelligent to take shelter because we need shelter. We need shelter. At any moment, this thing can erupt. What happened in New Zealand can be targeted at us. Because as the material energy turns up the heat on the demons, as stated in today's purport, they're not only envious of God, they're envious of others. They're envious of each other also. The demons don't just say, okay, let's gang together and beat up the devotees. They fight amongst themselves also. The reason why Kamsa became the leader of the demons is because he personally fought them. In the Garga Samhita, there's vivid description of the fights that he had. Hair-raising tales of fighting with other demons. And they rose so high in the sky, 800 miles above the surface of the earth, they're fighting. So he subdued them by his prowess, or he made alliances with them like he made alliance with Jarasandha. So like that, the demons are envious of everyone. Because again, each demon is thinking, I should be number one. Why should there be anybody over me? You see? So for the time being, they will make alliance, but as soon as they get an opportunity, bam. So you can't trust a demon. Even if you're a demon yourself, you can't trust. Because this is how they come to ascendancy. You see, like in all these mafia families, somebody's in charge for some time and then one day he doesn't come home. Because some other mafioso decides it's my turn to be capo di tutti capi, head of all heads, and boom. So we shouldn't try to give up the demonic mentality. It's clearly described in the 16th chapter. We should always try to know in every situation what we should do, what we should not do. Just like I was talking to our Bhakta Brad today. He's going to be the designated driver to go to the festival in Laguna. So I explained to him that it's your responsibility to stay awake. Even if you have to miss the feast, bring the feast home with you. Do whatever it takes to stay awake. Because to drive a van full of Krishna's devotees is a very, very heavy responsibility. And I told him from my own experience, I know. I once in New York, I drove a bunch of devotees from the New York temple. This was like 88, 89, I think, to the Gita Nagari Rath Yatra, which is held on the farm there in Pennsylvania. So, drove, had a wonderful feast. Of course, it's a farm, a devotee farm. That means you're getting farm fresh milk from devotee protected cows, and you get curd from that milk. And all the vegetables are grown right there on the farm. Everything farm fresh. It was a wonderful feast. And I ate a little too much. So on the way back, driving the devotees, I was... So I started praying loudly to the Lord, please keep me awake. Not only do I not want to die, but I don't want to kill these devotees. And one of the things that actually kept me awake is because in those days, most of the temple beagles were standard transmission. Nowadays, everything is automatic. It's so easy to fall asleep. Put it in drive. So, with a standard transmission in Pennsylvania, that area is pretty hilly. And in those days, it was still the common understanding. It was turned out to be wrong. They don't do it anymore. But the common teaching when you drive a standard transmission was that you use engine compression to slow the vehicle down. In other words, if you're in top gear going fast and you want to slow down, you downshift. And nowadays they tell you don't do that. Just mash the brake and then upshift back to where you want to go. You see? But in those days they tell you if you want to slow down, come down from 5 to 4, 4 to 3, 3 to 2, like that, downshift. And then helped keep me awake because they have to keep downshifting. But it's a grave responsibility with driving Krishna's devotees. Take it very seriously, please. Whether you're traveling Sankirtan or you're going to a particular festival, the designated driver, your main job is to stay awake. So if it means that you can't have an extra samosa or no samosa at all because you're afraid you're going to fall asleep from eating, which is natural. When you eat, what's called a parasympathetic nervous system takes over and you're not in control anymore. You find yourself nodding even against your wish. So don't do it. And it's also the responsibility of the passengers for your own sake to keep the driver awake. In other words, keep your eye on the driver. Don't space out reading a book or chit-chatting. Or somebody should keep their eye on the driver. Because we've had, unfortunately, in ISKCON, so many accidents. Sometimes it turns out to be good. In other words, the devotees make best of a bad situation. Prithu Prabhu tells a story of he was the Sankirtan leader. They were driving a big van through Germany. It was winter time, and the same thing, the driver fell asleep and went over the bank bed, and the van rolled and rolled and rolled and rolled and finally came to a stop upside down. So the locals, people who saw what happened, they came running over to see, make sure that, you know, whoever was in the van was okay. And but they were okay, but Prithu realized that he looked, you know, upside down. He looked out the window, saw so many people, said, "Prabhu, there are a lot of people outside. What do we do when we see people?" So they came out of the van with books, and they said, this is devotee mentality. The devotees are so smart. But it doesn't always wind up like that. There have been many accidents where devotees have died. So please stay awake on a daily basis wherever you drive. But especially when you're driving a van full of other devotees, it becomes such a responsibility. Don't take it lightly. Okay, we can stop here. Any questions, comments? Bhrigupati Prabhu?
Thank you, Prabhu. You were making the point that a pure devotee, he's always doing what Krishna wants him to do. So does that mean he can't make a mistake?
It may be a mistake in our estimation. In other words, like sometimes we see a pure devotee may apparently not remember a verse or something like that, or misquote it or something like that. But you can surmise that Krishna is laying the groundwork for people to not accept that person. Oh, he makes mistakes, so he can't be a pure person like that. You see?
So
Krishna is leaving the door open for you to accept or not accept. Just like, like himself. Apparently Krishna died. He got shot in the heel by a hunter. God, Krishna didn't die. But he left the door open for those non-believers who think, okay, you people think that Krishna is God, but we see that he was killed by a hunter, so how could he be God? Like that. Okay. So Krishna is leaving opportunity for those who don't want to believe.
I'll give you an example and you tell me what you're thinking. So at one point Hari Sari approached Prabhupada and he said, Prabhupada, in your eighth canto...
Yeah, I know the passage. Yeah, go ahead.
Was that offensive on Hari Sari's part? Do you want me to describe it? I don't know, the other devotees probably don't know you. You could describe it if you like.
Yeah. The battle between the demons and the demigods, and Prabhupada is using that description to show that the moon is above the sun.
Correct.
Farther away from the earth than the sun. So what Hari Sari pointed out, how it was actually described there. And yes, so you can say it was a mistake. But why would Krishna allow that? Again, to give an opening for others to not accept Srila Prabhupada as being a pure devotee. You see, Prabhupada himself says about the omniscience fallacy. That
but Hari Sari wasn't being offensive by pointing it out to Prabhupada.
No, he wasn't being offensive. You should know and respectfully present. Just like in the memory series, there was a conversation, there was a presentation by Madhudvisha Prabhu that he was with Prabhupada. They were flying from India to Nairobi, Kenya to bring deities. Flying together, they brought the deities on the plane, actually. The deities were right there in front of them. And then Prabhupada said, "Let's have a fight." Fight? Prabhupada said, "Yes." He said, "As pure devotee, you have to be ready to fight the Mayavadis at every step. So you be the Mayavadi, I'll be the pure devotee, I'll be the devotee, and we'll fight. We'll have a debate." So Madhudvisa did his best, presenting all the Mayavadi arguments, and Prabhupada smashed them. And then Prabhupada said, "Now, you be the devotee, I'll be the Mayavadi." And again Prabhupada smashed it. So, as a disciple, yes, you have to do what is right in that situation. So it was right for Hari Sari in that situation to present what he saw. And on that occasion, Prabhupada accepted. But we see in the life of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu with his guru, Ishvara Puri, that Ishvara Puri had written some Sanskrit poetry, and when he came to Navadvip, he presented it to Nimai, he presented it to Lord Chaitanya for editing. And Lord Chaitanya first said, "You're my spiritual master. I cannot..." "No, I want you to edit it, so edit." So he went through carefully and he changed this and made suggestions here and there. And then he brought it back to Ishwara Puri, and Ishwara Puri said, no, this is correct, and that is correct. He went through it together, but he asked him to edit it. So similarly, Prabhupada asked us to edit his books. So people don't realize that. As I've said many, many times, the Sanskrit editing department and the English editing department did not create themselves. They were created by Prabhupada, because Prabhupada wanted his books to be polished. Prabhupada wanted his books to be polished. So you do what the spiritual master asks you to do. On the one hand, a disciple could think, my spiritual master wrote this, it must be perfect. How can I dare touch it? But Prabhupada wanted it to be polished. So he created a Sanskrit editing department to polish the Sanskrit. He created an English editing department to polish the English. Can't argue with that. Okay, so let's get ready to go to Laguna Beach and participate in the regional Gaur Purnima Festival. Jai, Granthara Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai, Gaur Bhaktavrinda Ki Jai. Hare Krishna.
Who knows how long the debate over book edits will go on.
This is the same thing.